My God, why have you forsaken me? Please be seated. Before bidding Lazarus in last week's gospel to come out from the tomb, Jesus had a little sidebar conversation with God. Father, thank you for having heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here so that they may believe that you have sent me. Which is to say, that it may have felt to Lazarus's friends and family that all was lost, but wink, wink, you and I both know that everything is going to be okay. God's got this, so now watch what I do through faith. I am not being fair to that text, I know that. Whatever God has got or not got, faith is our ability to trust that though this life has suffering and pain, though our mortal lives come to an end, God is richly present, and death is never the final story. But all the same, that story of Lazarus swings between Jesus feeling real anguish and Jesus being remarkably unstung by the sting of death. In today's gospel, though, something is very different. There are no sidebar conversations. There are no knowing glances up to heaven. There are no platitudes. There are no euphemisms and no silver linings. My God, why have you forsaken me? This week, I watched the film Hamnet, where we see William Shakespeare and his wife, Agnes, live a beautiful life until their son dies tragically. Now, I'm not sure if it was a good idea or not for me to watch this movie. It was beautiful, but it was also really painful to watch. Because as they poured their grief out at their sudden loss, my God, why have we been forsaken? Their sadness jumped off the screen and shot straight to the places in my heart where I have known sudden loss. And in a heartbeat, it was immediate and real all over again. Grief is something that we cannot telegraph. We cannot compartmentalize sadness. And when we suffer, it is an all-consuming experience. When heartbreak comes, everything else in our highly evolved brains, in our supposedly highly evolved brains, we are so consumed with that that everything in our brains goes offline and we are left holding something frightening and raw, but also something that is immediate and real. My God, why have you forsaken me? Could Jesus really be saying this? Is this the same Messiah who fed 5,000 and raised his friends to life? Could he be feeling the same fear, the same pain, the same existential feeling of alienation that we all feel sometimes? Can it be true that when the loss is that real and the pain is that acute and we feel so alone, can it be that God is as close to us in that moment as God ever is? That to cry to God in such anguish may be the most faithful prayer that we can offer. And that these hardest moments are the ones where God is most richly present. The cross is a hard thing to look at. Yet the cross speaks of heartbreak and loss, which is a part of life. And it's a part that cannot be washed away by success or power or even faith. To embrace the cross is to embrace life itself. To deny the cross, which is where we put a whole lot of energy in this life. And I might add that if we look at our world, if we look at our lives and we see something that just feels like absolute madness, there is a good chance that somewhere in there, someone is trying to deny the cross, is trying to deny the reality of suffering and pain and trying to buffer themselves from it, no matter what the cost. To deny the cross is to pretend that we can buffer ourselves from hardship and from suffering, and from parts of life that are just life. To deny the cross is to turn away from life itself. In the Passion Gospel today, we see a number of ways to deny the cross. Pilate does it by passing the buck. Now he wisely sees that there is a game being played that does not have his best interest at heart. He sees that the chief priests are trying to use him, but he fails to use the power that he actually has and lets a great injustice happen on his watch. The chief priests find a particularly clever way to deny the cross. They look to the crowd. They fire up the mob and thus create leverage, which is another word for power. Now, a movement can be a beautiful thing, especially if it is about love and justice and nonviolence. But a crowd fueled by bitterness or resentment can be a very dangerous organism with a lot of talons and claws, but is far too easily manipulated. When we look to that crowd for our identity, or for the rush that it gives us, or a way to expand our own power to keep hold to whatever status quo we have, then we turn away from the cross itself. Jesus was alone on the cross. Sometimes faith comes when we are alone. We also deny the cross when we look with contempt on those who suffer. And I'm thinking of all of those who in the gospel today pass by Jesus when he was on the cross, who derided him, shaking their heads. I don't think I ever noticed that before. We all know that Jesus is there suffering on the cross, and we all remember what they say, which is, if you are the Son of God, come down from the cross. Prove to us who you say that you are. But what I notice this time is that procession of folk who walk before the foot of the cross, and they look up, and what do they say? They shake their heads. Oh, tisk, tisk. We deny the cross sometimes when we are looking right at it. That's not metaphor. That's just plain old self-delusion. And that's what's happening to these folks who are walking in front of it, looking at Jesus and denying what the very thing that they are looking at. We deny the cross when we create an imaginary buffer between ourselves and the person in pain. When we mock them, when we find ways to figure out our own superiority, when we hold fast to the proprieties and the conventions that we think keep us safe from a similar fate. To embrace the cross is to embrace life. In Hamnet, William and Agnes, who have suffered the fate no parent should suffer, cannot turn away from it. They cannot turn away from their suffering and their grief. Agnes, because she is wholehearted and wise. William, because of his poet's heart. Both of them, because they are parents and because they are human. And to be human is sometimes to bear the cross. To live with uncertainty and hardship, to sometimes suffer and to feel pain. This is to embrace the cross, not to be a martyr or a masochist, but simply to embrace that life comes with great joy, but it also comes with hard times. And to walk with Jesus is to turn towards that, to know that God is with us in our darkest hours. God is with us in our sleepless nights, in the dark nights of the soul. And we carry that cross, we embrace that cross when we help others to bear the burden. To shoulder the burden, as Simon of Cyrene does, is to embrace life. When in our prayers, we pick up the burdens of this world. When we serve a meal to someone who is hungry. When we walk with someone through a period of hardship. We share in Christ's passion. We are called to help carry Jesus' cross. We are called to help carry the crosses that our neighbors have on their shoulders as well. We are even called to share the burden that rests on the shoulders of our adversaries and our enemies. Can you imagine what kind of a world order that would create if that was what it meant to be a Christian and to be a human being? When we pour ourselves out for the world, as Jesus did, we embrace the cross. We open our arms to receive and comfort those who have become lost. We open our arms to carry the burden of hardship, to transfigure it rather than to simply pass it along. We open our arms to return to God the only thing that God really wants of us. To respond to unconditional love with an embrace of pure openness. To embrace the cross is to embrace life itself.